Good afternoon. The House Education Finance Committee will come to order. And let's see, we should probably get the minutes out of the way. We do have a quorum, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we've got a quorum. Let's see, Representative Sandstead, would you like to move adoption of the minutes from the February 14th meeting?
Madam Chair, I would like to move the minutes.
Thank you very much. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor of Representative Sandstead's motion to approve the minutes from February 14th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you very much. And with that, we've got a few bills that we're going to hear today, and all of them will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus or other bill. But we're very pleased to have Representative Swazinski leading off with House File 379. And with that, I would move that House File 379 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or action at a later time. And with that, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Loon, for the honor to come before this committee. Appreciate this opportunity to talk about House File 379. I appreciate the work this committee did last session in appropriating money in the development of this program for Southwest State in coordination with a lot of the local school districts, well, actually throughout the state, when it comes to special licensure and the focus on paraprofessionals. This bill lies before us, for one, from the finance side, but also just from the policy side on eligibility. When it comes to who is eligible to actually participate in this program. We wrote it very narrowly to deal with paraprofessionals and as they were trying to retrieve licensure to help local districts. We all know the big issues we have with the shortages of educators, especially in the area of licensure and especially in the area of special education. So if you look on the bill on House File 379 on line 1.14, that's probably the biggest portion of some of the additions, and it just talks about teachers without a special education license working with a variance and then individuals teaching with community expert licenses. And so that's a general expansion of who would be eligible then to participate in this program, and we'd appreciate your thoughtful consideration on this bill. I have Dwight Watson with SMSU to speak about the program as it is working in currently at Southwest State University, and then Cliff Carmody with the Southwest West Central Cooperative, who they kind of worked very along with Sam Walseth, their representative, and they helped the creating of this bill last year, and we're just trying to move this bill, elongate it a little bit using the same amount of dollars that we set aside in the last biennium. And with that, if you guys want to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. And I just wanted to ask Mr. Strom a question quick before, so we're all clear on this. So basically, you're just wanting to move the money that was appropriated around a little bit into the year so that you can the program can utilize it most effectively. And Mr. Strom or Ms. Adrians?
Madam Chair and members, yes, what this does, it's the same amount of money, but the way that the language is written with the cancellation and then the reappropriation, it just keeps the bill in line with previously agreed upon budget rules.
Okay. Thank you. So I just want to make it clear so people know what we're talking about. Representative Nornes, did you have a question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just had a question basically dealing with this licensure. You're talking about paraprofessionals now, right?
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Nornes, that was the idea behind the bill. Originally was talking about paraprofessionals. I believe we had a hearing initially in your committee, and then it came to higher or to regular ed the last session. And that was to deal with, you know, really looking at folks that are already working within school districts, that already are serving within the school, and really trying to expand their capability and their ability to service special needs students through special education. And so this bill also seeks to look at areas where other folks working within those same districts that are not currently allowed to participate in this program, but are also working in the school districts to expand their horizon, expand their skill set to better serve the needs of their students.
Here, Madam Chair, just the question, this is now required, isn't it, the license to be a paraprofessional in special education?
Representative,
is that a requirement?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Nornes, you know, the licenses that we are dealing with are, I think, generally required by the Board of Teaching, I believe, and so it's kind of bringing sure those skill sets are within the school districts. because they do not currently have these. I mean, they're not going to. I mean, most times I don't think school districts are pursuing multiple people that have multiple duplicative licensure. They're just trying to get at least one person, especially in my district, in rural Minnesota, that would have the skill set and the licensure required to adequately serve those students.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with any of that. My wife is a para and did not have a license, did not have any training, but had a lot of 32 years experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, with this requirement, how that has made it more difficult to hire people in that particular line of work. And then you add the requirement for the licensure on top of that. So it's only a question as to what it takes to become licensed, how long the process is that. And I guess that's the question.
Sure.
Madam Swazinski.
Madam Chair, Representative Nordis, we have Dan Dwight, Dwight Watson, here with Southwest State and Cliff Carmody, and I think they'll be able to fill in some of those cracks.
Thank you. Representative Sansa, do you have a question?
I do, Madam Chair. It's Representative, I'm wondering, on your bill, line 1.14, mm-hmm. It says, teachers without a special education license. I'm assuming you named a licensed teacher licensed in a different area that would then be covering in special ed on a variance.
Representative Sussens.
Madam Chair, Representative Sands, I believe that's what we're going for, yes.
Representative Sandsif?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right, so why don't we turn to the testifiers, and then we'll come back to questions after that. Sorry. So welcome, gentlemen, to the committee, and if each of you would please just state your name before you offer your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Dwight Watson, and I'm the Provost and Vice President at Southwest Minnesota State University. This program, the Paraprofessional the Special Education Licensure Program, is up and running at Southwest Minnesota State University. We have currently about 20 students in the program. The students are paraprofessionals. Paraprofessionals are people who are working as teacher assistants in the schools. They don't necessarily have their license in special ed, but they want to pursue their license in special ed. And what we have provided with your support are online courses for these teachers, paraprofessionals, and they get to do their practicum work and their student teaching work right within their workplace. We work closely with the cooperative to find placements for the teachers, as well as recruit the teachers to be in the program. This extension will allow us to move into another cohort. We feel we want to honor the call for of the bill, which is said try to provide licensure for 50 people. We have 20 now. We have another 30 that are in the hopper. The 30 that are in the hopper are those who are not only paraprofessionals, but also those who have a variance. A variance is when you are allowed to teach outside of your licensure area. So you can teach special ed for a while, and you have to get the license. And we're trying to provide an opportunity using the same funds for those who are on a variance. Another set of teachers that are in the Southwest area are those who are on what's called a community license. These are people who have community expertise in special education, but not necessarily a teaching license. They can work in the school for a while, but they have to get their license according to the Board of Teaching, and we want to extend this program to those as well. And we work very closely with the Southwest Cooperative, and Mr. Carmody can talk about their role in this partnership.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Cliff Carmody. I'm the Executive Director at Southwest West Central Service Cooperative in Marshall. And I want to thank you for providing time this afternoon for me to speak on behalf of this bill. As Dr. Watson indicated, we are a key partner with SMSU on this. We've talked about this for actually a number of years. And the original intent on what we were trying to accomplish was exactly what was stated, was to bring non-licensed individuals, whether a paraprofessional on a community waiver of some kind, or a waiver of some kind, a community expert of some kind, provide them an opportunity to become a special ed licensed special ed teacher in an effort to impact the challenges that not only do we have as an organization, but that our schools have in the region to find licensed special ed teachers. And so the original intent was that the law was written, which we greatly appreciate, the support that we got last session and for your continued support to talk about this bill. This session was written with a narrow focus in mind, and it's keeping a number of potential candidates from being able to participate. For example, in our agency alone, we have 27 total FTEs on some kind of variance, waiver, or community expert. It's about 25% of our teaching workforce. 15 of those would qualify under this renewed change in the law and could participate if they wish in this program. We think that it will provide greater opportunities. We think it's the one other key aspect, I think, of the program that Dwight mentioned was when we were talking about this, we realized very quickly that a paraprofessional or someone on some kind of variance to quit work and go back into a traditional program was not going to be effective. And so we consider alternative. It's online. We work with the university to get the word out about this program, and we will, as this first cohort comes through, work with the university as we look at placements for those students so that they can become licensed teachers. But again, thank you for your work last year, and thank you again for your consideration this session.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carmody. We appreciate you being here to share your testimony. And Representative Spasinski, I think you do have a special guest in the audience, which we neglected to mention before you started. Would you like to introduce her?
Yes. Well, I have brought along my assistant, Hildy Spasinski, who is my second daughter in line. And
have we thoroughly embarrassed her?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I do believe that's the case.
Very good. No, we just want her to see the committee she may be running someday. So welcome, Hildy. We're glad you're here. So, all right. So with that, do you have any other testifiers?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Anyone else from the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? All right. So with that, any final comments, Representative Susan's?
Appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, this was started last year when we had our supplemental and some additional funds that we could put into programs. And I compare this almost to sort of like the grow your own, and that we've got in Minneapolis. We're trying to make sure that we can get more special education teachers licensed, and looking at our paraprofessionals is a great way to help address that. So thanks for the idea and bringing the innovation to us. We wish you success.
Thank you.
With that, we renew your motion that House File 379 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much for coming today, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Erickson, if you want to move to the Texas Fire table, we'll next take up House File 689.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 689 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
All right.
Or for later action.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Please proceed when you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And sorry we lost Hildy, because she was going to see the Iron Maidens who are sitting behind me. So if the representative hears this, bring Hildy back so she can see these wonderful girls. The reason I'm bringing this forward is that we have a great need in our schools to improve exposure to STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we, of course, want to engage our young women in that as well, our young men too. But they are more prone to take those courses. So this appropriation would provide for grants up to $75,000 to districts that would offer courses that have STEM as the emphasis. And yesterday you did hear from a school district, a local school district, that uses Project Lead the Way, and we're going to hear shortly from my testifier on that. You have in your packet a special handout on Project Lead the Way. It's a fact sheet, and I think my testifier might refer to it. Also a combination of handouts of Project Lead the Way courses that are offered, and I believe that Mr. Mecklenburg will also refer to that. And then the best part of the show today, and I'm going to call it a show even though I forgot to ask the Iron Maidens to bring their robotics project to demonstrate. That's my fault, members. They're going to talk about their competition. They have advanced now, and they're in a regional competition because they won first recently. And they're going to spend time describing to you their project that revolves around STEM. It's a robotics project. So I feel really bad that I did not ask them to bring the project to demonstrate, but we will enjoy anyway their presentations. So that, with that said, Madam Chair, I think I'd like to, us to hear from Mr. Mecklenburg, who does handle Minnesota Project Lead the Way as the program director and outreach through, you know, let's see, where are you?
Out of the Minnesota State University.
Mankato. Thank you. So please introduce yourself.
Thank you.
All right.
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Mecklenburg, and I'm a career educator of 41 years, and I'm very proud of that fact. I presently work out of Minnesota State University, Mankato, and I'm the program director for Minnesota Project Lead the Way. We know well the challenges that Minnesota and our nation faces with STEM and competing globally with other nations. Today, I would like to take the opportunity to use this teachable moment and show you, show the committee, what a truly outstanding STEM program looks like and how support from House File 689 could provide more opportunities for more schools and students in Minnesota. Project Lead the Way began in Minnesota in 2002 with six schools, and today we are in over 400 schools across Minnesota. I am fortunate, for I have personally seen the benefits Project Lead the Way brings to students in Minnesota and our nation. More importantly, I'm a grandfather where Project Lead the Way is in the school for two of my high school grandchildren and three of my elementary grandchildren. We all want what is best for our students, and in my case, my grandchildren. I truly believe the Project Lead the Way is the best STEM initiative that we have in our state and nation today. Again, there's information in your packets about the programs, the K-12, and also solid research that shows the success that Project Lead the Way brings to students. At the elementary, Project Lead the Way empowers students to think creatively and problem solve through hands-on activities, and to explain their design and build projects to others. The middle school Project Lead the Way curriculum has 9 units of instruction that help students explore in the biomedical, computer science, and engineering pathways with a flexible delivery option. The high school program offers 9 year-long courses where students gain industry skills and competency. Project Lead the Way courses are the purest curriculum that we have today. And by that, I mean students are doing the same in Adams, Minnesota, to Baudet, to Pipestone, to Winona, and as well as from New York to California. High school Project Lead the Way courses have end-of-course assessments that are online. So credit recognition and scholarships can be given to students to recognize their success. We have an extensive network in Minnesota with our college and universities for Project Lead the Way credit. The Project Lead the Way program courses are all under Career and Technical Education, CTE. I respectfully ask that you give careful consideration to House File 689 and its Senate Companion Bill 158. I ask that you invest in our most precious state's resources, our students. I'm available to offer additional information and support to legislatures to make this huge difference for our futures by passing this bill. I'm thankful that I got to testify first because I have a segue into the next our outstanding students. And I'm fortunate because many of our Project Lead the Way schools are also involved with FIRST Robotics. So I spent a number of weekends as a judge and judge advisor, so I've seen these ladies in the past, and they truly are outstanding. My mantra is, the students are our future, and our future is most bright. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mecklenburg.
And Madam Chair, I would appreciate if Mr. Mecklenburg would explain to the newcomers on this committee the nonprofit project Lead the Way. Would you be able to spend some time
yes.
explaining that so they know that this is a comprehensive program if the school district incorporates it, not only staff development for teachers, but curriculum. It's very comprehensive. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, Mr. Mecklenburg.
Mr. Mecklenburg.
Project Lead the Way nationally began in 1998, and right now it is a nonprofit organization. So the schools pay a user fee, and that's based upon high school programs, and so that's how Project Lead the Way operates. I am an employee of Minnesota State, so I have been involved with Project Lead the Way in the beginning. I worked at the Minnesota Department of Education and now at Minnesota State full-time as a program director for Project Lead the Way. So it's a nationwide program. It's very well-developed. Again, the success that I've seen personally and also the document in the research information.
And if I may ask Mr. Mecklenburg, Madam Chair, with your permission, do we have any programs that begin earlier than grade 5 in Minnesota?
The launch program, that is K-5.
K-5.
That's the launch. And that started 3 years ago. That's where three of my grandchildren are in. And they're in the first grade right now. And if you get to, if I'm talking to them and they talk about constraints in engineering terms and redoing and design, it's really exciting. So that's a K-5 program. The middle school is 6 through high school. We have an overlap with middle school, high school, and our computer science. But again, that's that career exploration, helping our young people find those careers, those career pathways, is so very important. And that's where Project The Way as a STEM initiative does an outstanding job.
And Mr. Mecklenburg, how many schools of the 400 schools that are we have have Project Lead the Way, have the launch program for the youngest?
The launch is growing, and I can't give you the exact number. It's about 150 right now, launch programs, and that number is going up.
Excellent. Thank you. We've got a few questions. Representative Sanstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you could tell me, if a school were to apply for one of these grants and receive one of them, is the professional development component that you just mentioned required or optional? And if optional, when does that take place? Or if required, when does that take place?
Thank you.
Mr. Mecklenburg.
The professional development for Project Lead the Way is one of the key successes because it empowers teachers to deliver the curriculum with fidelity and integrity. We offer that training at the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State, Mankato, and St. Cloud State University in the summer. There's also training across the nation and other affiliates. So that professional development, it depends upon what they're training for. Some of the gateway, the middle schools, are 3 days. Some of them are a week. All of the high school programs are 2 weeks. There's also online support through the learning management system for teachers to network, not just with teachers in Minnesota, but across the nation. So there's a really strong support system that exists in place to help teachers. So if they have a question, they can share and get a network.
Representative Sanson.
Okay. I understand the value of the professional development, absolutely. I guess I'm wondering, I didn't know if you really answered that it's required.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. It is required.
Okay.
For all teachers that deliver the curriculum to go through the training. I'm sorry.
Yep, that's okay. And then
Representative Anstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Who pays for that? Is that paid for through the grant?
That is paid by the district. So this funding would help the districts provide that training to the teachers.
Representative Anstead.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm don't understand how the district pays. Do they pay per pupil unit, or do they pay for the program, or
Mr.
each individual, and how much?
Okay, the program cost for the yearly cost, which includes all the curriculum, for the launch is $750 per year. For the middle school is $750. For the high school programs, the biomedical is $3,000. The engineering is $3,000, and the computer science is $2,000. If a district would offer computer science, biomedical, and engineering, the maximum that they would pay at the high school level would be $5,000 per year.
Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Mecklenburg, then that $5,000 is for participation of their entire student body or the
yes.
entire number of people in those classes?
It's for their entire student body by school. Okay, so example, Shakopee High School would pay $3,000 for their engineering. If they were the biomedical, which they are, they would pay another $2,000 for a maximum of $5,000 for any all the programs. And that's for all of the courses. So that is for the curriculum development, for the support to the Project Lead the Way, all of the other pieces that go along to make it successful for the students, the online assessments, so there's no other cost. There's also a very extensive software programs, CAD program, Autodesk Design Academy, that is also offered through Project Lead the Way.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To offer, is the STEM grant directed to Project Lead?
Madam Chair, Representative
Murphy. Lead the Way, I'm sorry.
Representative Moran, the grants would be to school districts who want to offer courses. If they want to associate with Project Lead the Way, that would be their decision. But the grants are intended for school districts to offer STEM courses, courses in STEM. So a special course in computer science might, their choice might be to use Project Lead the Way because it's such a comprehensive curriculum and staff development, as Mr. Mecklenburg said, and maybe he would like to add to that. Did I
yes.
answer that correctly?
That is correct.
Mr. Mecklenburg.
Yeah. And it would come through the Department of Education.
Yes.
So again, you know, again, working with the legislative community, you know, to set up parameters on how best to use that funds and monitor. That would be my understanding. And again, it's up to the legislatures to write that in the bill.
Representative Moran.
Yes, Madam Chair. So just for clarity, it is open to any district, school district, that wants to offer STEM. And it does not necessarily have to be a part of Project Lead the Way.
Madam Chair and Representative Moran, that's correct.
Thank you.
They don't have to align with Project Lead the Way. And the department would receive applications according to the form that the department wants to use, and then they would award the grants. And you will hear from Adosh Uni later about this operation that we might, again, give to the department. He, I think, offers some comment.
One other question.
Representative Moran.
Could you share with me whether or not Project Lead the Way is being utilized statewide?
Mr. Mecklenburg.
Yes, it is. It's across the state. As I identified some of the communities from northern Minnesota to southern Minnesota, and again, we're in over 400 school districts. So I continue to work with new schools across the state that want to implement it. And again, the schools that are implemented oftentimes will expand. They'll expand to the launch programs, the K-12 or the middle school or vice versa. There's not a set way to implement. There's flexibility, again, for the districts and schools.
Are there any urban schools taking advantage of Project Lead the Way?
Oh, many.
Mr. Mecklenburg.
Many, yes. Anoka School District is our largest, St. Paul, Minneapolis, There's many schools across Metro and across outstate Minnesota that are implementing it.
Thank you.
I could certainly give you the list if you wanted to.
Actually, I think that might be of interest to the committee, so if you can submit that, we'll make sure everyone receives it.
I will pass it on.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Representative Erickson.
If I may, thank you. In yesterday's presentation on CLEP, Representative Mariani's bill that I co-authored, we received a handout from St. Paul Public Schools, and I know that I think Representative Dabney asked the question about whether or not these students could take the CLEP. And I did speak with the testifiers after, and they told me that if the test is a CLEP test and it's worked in to the curriculum for Project Lead the Way, that's available. And they are really encouraging their students to take the CLEP test to receive the college credit. So that's another opportunity that Project Lead the Way could offer. But, of course, that's always available through a STEM course if it's taught at the high school level for students to take that CLEP test.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, my question is actually for and about the department, so
okay.
I can't wait until Mr. Rooney testifies okay. and see if I still have a question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I'm wondering if you can tell me, are there any oversight or accountability measures in place for these programs right now to see or measure their effectiveness?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I think that's built into the program, and maybe Mr. Mecklenburg will reply to that. But within this application process, I know the commissioner would include an accountability piece if a grant is awarded. That would be part of the application follow-up, as far as I'm concerned. But I think that Apple Valley might address that, too. What I was going to say, and maybe Mr. Mecklenburg can expand on this, grants from private organizations often help school districts with this. Correct, Mr. Mecklenburg?
Yes.
And would you also comment on the accountability, the follow-up that there is to a district or a school offering a Project Lead the Way?
Mr. Mecklenburg.
For the accountability issue, the high school courses all have an end-of-course exam. That is online. So the students take it online in their class period. So it's individual. So the students can not look over at the other next-door students to get the answers because it's individual. That assessment is graded. And it is through that assessment that there's a Stainine score bell curve. And so that is how we're very, can easily recognize the student's credit and transcript it to University of Minnesota, St. Cloud, Mankato, Bemidji, and also a number of our technical colleges through articulation agreements. And these, that credit recognition also goes across the nation, because we have affiliates across the nation that also recognize our students. So if a student from Minnesota passes the end-of-course exam at a certain percentage point, then they can apply for and receive transcripted credit or credit to that institution. It's always up to the institution that accepts the credit. We also have scholarships. Example, Dunwoody Technical College will offer a $1,500 scholarship to any student that takes a Project Lead the Way course in high school and passes with a C or better. So there's a process. That's an accountability piece. Project Lead the Way nationally also has certain standards that they require, and that is done in the recognition of an outstanding school is given if they meet those certain standards.
Representative Sandstedt.
In terms of the assessment that's taken at the end of the course, who develops that assessment?
The assessment is done, again, that's part of the fees that is paid by the school. And we have master teachers across the nation. We have a large number of those in Minnesota that develop those questions and put them into a test bank. So that's where the test questions come up. And it, again, it's online, so it's monitored that way by National Project Lead the Way. Project Lead the Way also works with advanced placement. And, example, the computer science, our very closely with AP. So students in Minnesota that take the computer science can also take the AP exam. Another way of validating their success.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, that last comment that Mr. Mecklenburg made is really a valuable one, because with computer science courses more in demand, the ability to take the AP course to get the college credit. And that college credit applies across the nation. Otherwise, when we think of the CLEP test, that's only applicable in our state. If a student takes the CLEP test, they can only transfer those or request transfer of those credits to one of our state colleges.
Thank you. Other questions at this point? Or let's see, would you like to have the department come down now, Representative Erickson, or move to your next testifiers?
I guess sure, we'll ask
Mr. Uni if you want to come down. I know that Representative Dabney.
And then we'll go to the best part of the presentation.
We will save the best, the Iron Maidens. We are all anxious to hear from them again. Yes. All right, welcome, Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representatives, my name is Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations with the Department. I'd like to second that they are certainly the best for last. Let's get me over and we'll move on to the real show. So I just want to quickly make some remarks that I had shared with Representative Erickson just about the grant program in general. We think maybe there should be some consideration around limitations or prescriptions around what the grant funding can be used for, so that if should this grant program go through, the department can dispense them and follow up on them with the intent of the legislature. So, for example, will the grants be allowable for or used for professional development, equipment and equipment purchases, and association fees? So this is just something to consider. And then, as with this grant, as with all grants, we would strongly recommend that grant administration discretion for the department is included funds, so that we, our program staff and our finance staff can administer the grants and then do appropriate follow-up. That leads me to the discussion that was had about accountability portions that these grants have in relation with the department. The department, with our grants programs, we follow up with grant recipients on the uses of the funding. So the grant recipients will submit to us a plan of what they will expend the funds on. And then we do periodic follow-ups to make sure that the funding has been expended that way after the contract has been signed. Unless it's written into law, we don't have any accountability follow-up on actual outcomes and success of the program in terms of student achievement levels, unless that's written into into language telling us to do so. And I believe there's a few programs that have that out there, but I can't remember that off the top of my head. And then one other thing that we may recommend for consideration by the author is if there should be an equity component to it, geographically based, and maybe an income-based one as well. I know there was some discussion about our urban schools versus greater Minnesota schools served.
Thank you, Mr. Rooney. And I think Representative Dabney had a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm up to two questions now.
Okay.
Sorry, apologies. But I think Mr. Rooney raised some of the concerns that I had. This is $3 million, which is a significant amount of money, but in $75,000 grants. And while $75,000 is not insignificant, there's a lot of $75,000 grants in $3 million. And asking the department to develop a process, develop applications, distribute them, review them, issue the grants, and then do any sort of accountability on the use of the grant funds without having funding allowed for that administration strikes me as a point of concern. And you touched on that. My question, I think, is for the author. And I'm looking at the use of the term courses here, page 1, line 9, at the end there. And I'm wondering about the interpretation of that word, particularly in the elementary level. As the committee knows, and Dr. Mecklenburg knows, I'm a big fan of Project Lead the Way. But particularly at the elementary level, what we want is STEM to be
incorporated throughout the curriculum so that the social studies lessons include graphing and charting and using mathematical concepts. And the reading uses science topics as part of the reading. And so I wonder, does courses capture the integration of STEM concepts, particularly at the elementary level, across the curriculum? And I believe that's for the author, but it might be for Mr. Rooney. I'm not sure.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dabney. These grants are really intended more for the high school level. I shouldn't say more. They are intended for the high school because we teach courses at the high school. I think that we also could have that occurring at the middle school level. But the intent is to increase our participation at the high school level so that we have this stage in a student's life where they're working toward an end result so that they qualify for what we need in the workforce. So if it's biomedicine, that's going to be a course at the high school level, whether it's computer science or it might be something else in the biology area or in the engineering area. These are intended at the high school level, or if a district is offering it at the middle school level. I think Mr. Mecklenburg would agree that I'm saying this correctly. But the intention, I think I'm correct, is for more the high school level to prepare for the workforce, to send these students off to two-year colleges who welcome them immensely with their coursework and their credits, and then to four-year colleges if that also is applicable.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, thank you, Chair Erickson. You confirmed the bias that I thought I was seeing in the bill with the use of the term courses, because I immediately thought that this was intended for high school or maybe middle school. I would urge you, Madam Chair, if you choose to include this in the omnibus bill, that you look at expanding that. What we know from the research and what the Iron Maidens may be able to ratify or stipulate to today is that often boys and girls in the elementary grades have equal interest in STEM, and then you hit about middle school, and for the girls it often starts to decline at that point. And that research really then is an argument for deepening our commitment to STEM in the elementary grades, because if we don't salt there, by the time they get to the middle school and high school courses, the interest has dropped off. And I think we will see, you would see on participation similar patterns across racial and ethnic groups. So I would urge you, if you do include this, to broaden it out to be more inclusive of elementary as well. Thank you.
Appreciate the suggestion, Representative Dabney.
And Madam Chair, I would say these dollars would be available for grants to districts if a district chose to apply for a Project Lead the Way in the launch area, then the dollars would be available. But the use of the word courses is intentionally intended for middle or high school, where students do take particular courses rather than a broad array of subjects that we consider elementary level.
Thank you, Representative Harrison. Mr. Uni, just a question for you. I know, and this topic has come up as the department has presented its the governor's budget proposal and discussions about the administration of grants and making sure that there's funds available to the department for that work. And I just wanted you to know that I'm listening carefully to those comments and considering. But I'm just wondering if you could give us sort of a sense of what the department would like or minimally expect in terms of I'm assuming is a percentage of the funds allocated for those duties. And the reason I'm asking that is I was in another committee in Commerce yesterday. We were talking about another program, and a member mentioned that some, I think it was, if it was in justice programs or something else, that, you know, it was a 2.5% amount that was utilized for administrating grant program or certain types, and I've heard higher amounts. I was meeting with someone earlier today who mentioned that an agency takes as much as 35% from federal funds that flow through their department, which seems excessive to me. So could you offer some guidance for the committee on what the department is seeking or would consider to be a reasonable ask?
Madam Chair, members, we're not asking as high as 35%.
Good.
I'll assure you that for this purpose.
Okay.
Our standard ask for administration fees is at 5%. And I believe, especially as Representative Dabney pointed out, with the administrative task of $75,000 chunks for under $3 million, that would align with the 5% quite well, with the administrative task of many program staff having to basically do the oversight of what's in the contract and the expenditures as well.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Appreciate that. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I needed to make a correction on the CLIP tests. They're transferable to any college in the United States because it is a college board test. When I misspoke, I intended to say that Minnesota colleges and universities must accept the CLEP test. So I stand corrected on that, and thank you, Mary Gilbert, for correcting me.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erickson, for informing the committee of that. Any other questions for Mr. Uni or Representative Erickson at this time? If not, we are all anxious to hear from the rest of our testifiers on this bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, because when we have young women who can exhibit for us a grave interest or a great interest in STEM, we'd like to hear from them, and these young women are the Iron Maidens. They're part of a robotics team. FRST Robotics is their category from Apple Valley. So we welcome them, and I think they have their lineup ready, and I believe we're going to lead off with a student. No, we're going to lead off with their coach.
Okay. Is that Mr.
Coach
Lynn?
Instructor.
Okay. Please come on down. But we'll get some more chairs for you ladies as well.
Oh, we can move in now.
Okay.
When the photographer comes, we'll get the whole group.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting us to testify. My name is Jim Lynch. I'm actually the program manager for a federally funded STEM grant out of the Department of Labor called E3 STEM. It's part of a larger group of grants across the nation called Youth Career Connect. The intent of that grant is to try to get more students into STEM careers, particularly those that are underrepresented in STEM professions, females and minorities. And I'm also, I wear two hats, and that's why these young ladies are here today. And I'm also the faculty advisor for the FRST Robotics programs at Apple Valley High School. And I firmly believe that there's a synergistic very positive effect between our STEM grant programming, the coursework related to that, and the co-curricular programs revolving around STEM. And I'm particularly passionate about the FRST programs, but there are others. So I'm going to very quickly yield to our Iron Maidens because they are the show, not me. But I wanted to share a couple of things. These Iron Maidens have completed over 1,200 hours of outreach, and they've really piqued the interest of many young people, especially one of their goals is younger students, particularly females in STEM. I heard a statement earlier about trying to impact younger students, and I really, really firmly believe that. It's important, obviously, to have students at this level, at high school level, get this programming, but we, quite honestly, will lose a lot of our females and some of our other students before high school if we don't support those kinds of things. So I just wanted to put in a word for that. So I could describe the impact of both these programs, but I think it's very, very important for you to hear from these young ladies. And at that, I'm going to hand the microphone over.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch, and welcome. And please, just if each of you could state your name for us before your comments, that would be very helpful.
All right. My name is Corey Roberts, and I am one of the Iron Maidens. We are a third-year all-female FIRST Tech Challenge robotics team from Apple Valley High School. and we recently competed at the Minnesota State Competition for First Tech Challenge Robotics, where we actually did quite well, and we qualified to the next level of competition, which is called Super Regionals. That's going to take place in Iowa in March, and if we qualify from there, we'll go to the World Championship in April. So we're super excited about that. This year, our robot does a variety of things, including hitting buttons and also picking up wiffle balls and then launching them into goals.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts.
All right. Hello. Hello, I'm Connie Knipe, a junior at Apple Valley High School and active member of the robotics team, the Iron Maidens, as well as the E3 STEM program. First of all, I would like to thank Representative Erickson for inviting us here today and for you all for hearing this bill that has the potential of influencing so many lives through programs such as robotics and E3 STEM. Now, to clear up a few misconceptions, E3 STEM and robotics aren't just for people interested in science and technology or just geeks to join. They're for anyone who likes to try new things and have fun at the same time. We have learned so many valuable life skills such as problem solving in groups, communicating with others, and organizing ourselves into a successful team. And it's easy to say that robotics has changed our lives for the better. When I first entered high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do in my life. I wasn't able to continue my career in sports because I had received a concussion, and my communication skills were very lacking. But when I entered robotics and the E3 STEM program, it changed my life. They gave me a variety of opportunities, from visiting colleges, offering people internships at companies, and providing so many field trips of all kinds. One of my favorite events I was fortunate enough to go on was a trip to the FBI building. We would not call it a normal STEM field trip. It was where we learned about police negotiations, forensics, and criminology. It was very interesting and a cool experience that not many people can say they had gone to. And it was all because of E3 STEM. It also gives students the opportunity to connect with trained professionals that are involved in the student's desired profession. I myself was mentored by a biochemical engineer through E3 STEM. It was a good thing, too, because as I found out from it, I do not want to go into biochemistry. Yeah. If not for E3 STEM or all of these opportunities that robotics has given us, I would have never known that. I wouldn't have been exposed to all of these life-changing opportunities, and I thank it for that. Now I'm going to pass it on to my fellow presenter, Barbara Tan.
Thank you, Ms. Knight.
Good afternoon, all. My name is Barbara Tan. I am a junior at Apple Valley High School, and I'm part of the E3 STEM and Robotics programs at the school. Words cannot describe the impact STEM has had on my life. By being part of the Iron Maidens robotics team and the E3 STEM program, I have been given opportunities that I would have never dreamed of, including advocating on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., competing at the FACE World Championships, and even testifying here at the Minnesota State Capitol. With my participation in E3 STEM, I am able to learn skills outside the classroom and earn college credit by enrolling in college courses offered through the program. I have taken an Intro to Healthcare college course and am currently taking a medical terminology course. I know that both these classes will help me in my future career in the medical field. E3 STEM has also provided field trips and workshops that have prepared me for college and beyond. The list of activities offered is endless, but I must say that all the experiences I have had in this program are simply unbelievable. One of the best parts of E3 STEM is that it reaches a diverse group of students and is continuously growing. The ability to get hands-on experiences in the world is truly life-transforming. A few years ago, I would not have been able to speak in front of everyone here today, but because of the E3 STEM and robotics programs, I have gained self-confidence and am on the right path to success. Before I joined the Iron Maidens and the E3 STEM program, STEM seemed so distant to me, but now I am able to make my ideas reality by applying it in and outside the classroom. I am beyond thankful for all the experiences I have had because of both activities, and I am sure my teammates can say the same. I hope that one day all students are given the opportunities that E3 STEM and robotics has provided me with. Thank you. I will now pass it on to my good friend Emily.
welcome.
Hello, my name is Emily DeBoard. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing this bill today. I'm here today to talk about the ways that the E3 STEM program, as well as robotics, has changed my life. However, I will mostly be talking about the E3 STEM program. So you may not know, but E3 STEM, the three E's stand for exploration, education, and employment, and that is definitely what it has provided for all of us. With so many potential fields to study, the idea of narrowing down the possibilities seemed like a really daunting and nearly impossible task for me. However, E3 STEM has provided us with endless opportunities to visit real workplaces. Not only have I learned about STEM careers, I've also learned a lot about myself, because E3 STEM offers career counseling, which is just an opportunity to talk to people about what you are passionate about and then make a solid plan for your future. E3 STEM has also provided several workshops and seminars to prepare me for entering college and the workforce, such as resume building sessions and several mock interviews, and those have been extremely helpful in my quest to prepare myself for the future. And on top of all of this, E3 STEM has also provided us opportunities to take part in internships at different businesses and at our school. This program has opened so many doors for me, and it has prepared me for my future almost more than anything ever has. Now, instead of being afraid of what comes next, I'm excited to take the next big step in my life. As a robotics team, we've done over 1,200 hours of outreach to get kids interested in STEM, but it is vital that schools are able to offer programs that will keep this interest alive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bard. And we have two other members of the team with us, right? Would each of you like to say something? Or at least introduce yourself. All right, at least introduce yourselves. We're very happy that you're here.
Hello, I'm Marie Pena. So on the robotics team, we all have certain tasks that we choose, but the difference with First Tech Challenge is that no matter what we find interest in, we can all jump to these different tasks. So on the team, last year I focused on building, and this year I am able to start learning programming.
All right. Hi, my name is Atalanta Stokey. Coupling with what Marie said on the team, I am the main programmer. I'm helping teach Marie and some of the other members programming.
Great. Thank you. I am so impressed, as I was last time you came before the committee, and I'm glad you're doing well. One question for any of you or all of you who want to answer. Was this something that through the E3, the robotics program, how did you get interested in this? Did you always have an interest in science and technology and engineering from an early age or not so much, and this attracted you into it?
So for me, I come from a family of 9 people, 7 kids. My dad has always been interested in technology and things like that, so he pushed for us to try and do these things. But once I came to middle school, I was very reluctant in those things, getting tired of constantly hearing those type of things. So I started to do theater and things like that. So what happened was the Iron Maidens, one of their outreach events was actually at a middle school that my brother was attending. And so I saw them there, and my father pointed out, "Don't you like doing that type of stuff? Why'd you stop doing, you know, computers, and why are you focusing on theater?" So reluctantly, I was like, okay, yeah. And so I contacted them, and I joined the Iron Maidens. And that year, after I had joined, they had all started signing up for the E3 STEM program, and they all pushed me to join. So then, slightly reluctantly, I also joined the E3 STEM program, and through that, I'm now interning at Thomson Reuters, and because of the Iron Maidens, I'm able to communicate to all of the employees there and share my ideas.
That's wonderful.
So overall, we all come from different backgrounds, people with different levels of experience with technology and engineering and STEM in general. Personally, my father has worked for many years in the technology field, specifically with computers, so I've always known that was a thing, but because of our robotics program and because of E3 STEM, I know more about it. So now it's not just, computers, you can play games on them! It's now more of, you can build these, you can do so many more things, you can, like, there's so many opportunities that robotics and E3 STEM coupled, they can help you gain through this.
And one other question from me, do you know how unique it is to have an all women's robotic team, young women, and are more being started because of the infamy of the Iron Maidens? I hope so.
Yeah, so in terms of all-female teams in Minnesota, there are about 160-plus First Tech Challenge teams in the state, but roughly maybe 10 or probably a little bit less are all-female. But the ones that are actually do really well at this past state championship, three of the teams that are all women moved on out of the 8 slots that Minnesota had, and then there was also another one that traveled out of state to qualify. So two super regionals, there's actually going to be 4 of the teams, or 4 of the all-female teams from Minnesota being represented there. So the ones that are in existence are doing really well, and there are more that are always forming. So, for example, we mentor a team, a rookie team at the middle school that just formed called the Rebellious Robots, who Emily actually has a sister on. And so that's really cool, too.
That is just fantastic. Chair is not surprised that the women's teams are doing well. And did you have something to add?
As for getting more girls interested in STEM and robotics specifically, this last summer, actually, through a program called Aspire IT, it was a grant program, we were able to put on a summer Arduino programming and engineering camp that focused on teaching young girls grades 3 through 6 how to wire, build, and program Arduinos, like little computer chips. There were 25 girls that have signed up, 24 attended, one had to cancel last minute, and it was a huge success. We gave them different projects of varying levels of difficulty to do, to great success. And in order to help continue that inspiration, that interest in STEM, we allowed them to take the Arduinos home with them, as well as different like small kits of parts and different projects that they could do later on.
That's fantastic. I just encourage you all to continue to be ambassadors for getting more girls involved in STEM. I mean, you have wonderful stories to share, and I think just you telling your story and encouragement and the projects you're doing, especially with younger girls, would be of tremendous impact. So Representative Jurgens has a question.
More a comment. First of all, what an impressive group of young women here. I congratulate you all. And to the student who said that you got involved with this because you said you had poor communication skills, your communication skills are just fine. And all of you are equally impressive in that regard, and I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Representative Krishna.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was probably just raising my hand.
Okay. Yes, any other questions? All right. Well, again, thank you so much for being here. You can be assured you've got a strong fan base on the Education Finance Committee. We wish you the best of luck as you move into, is it super regionals? Super regionals in March. So we'll be watching for how you do, and good luck to all of you.
Thank you.
And so, all right, Representative Erison, you didn't have any additional testifiers, correct?
No, Madam Chair, but I did want to mention when we're talking about money that on the Department of Education website, besides their links to grants that are available, I found about 40 private grants that are available, some of them earmarked for technology, you know, Best Buy, for example. They would like to have our young people enter technology or those kinds of careers. So, you know, there's private dollars out there, too, and I think that some of our schools do benefit from those private grants. So if we aren't able to do this $3 million appropriation that would allow up to $75,000 in grants, I would encourage members to talk to their school districts about seeking private grants. So with that, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 689 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. We will do so, and thank you very much for good discussion and great testifiers. We appreciate that. All right. So finally today, not a bill presentation, but I have asked the founders of a program called Rock and Read, which received a grant last year in the supplemental. It's a program to help struggling students learn how to read, and they are here to give us a report on how their pilot project has been doing, and we're happy to have them here with us today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Jones, and my partner Ann Kay started the Rock and Read Project 3 years ago. We received state funding this last year, and normally I'm the tech person, but Ann has her computer, so she's going to do that, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. We initially started, we bought a bus, we took that to North Minneapolis, and then we realized the bus was not the way we were going to provide this program, so we started installing labs in schools. Last year we came to the state legislature. We received a $100,000 grant. We initially planned on doing 3 schools. However, because of some cost savings at those schools where they already had some of the software we needed, the testing we needed, the equipment we needed, we were able to add a 4th school. With that, we were required, and we have done an interim report that Ann has put together.
Have they passed them out?
And I think they're being passed out right now. So the first thing we'd like to do is just run a very short clip from KSTP so you get a little bit of a feel of what the program is, and then Ann will go through the report and answer questions.
Well, Madam Chair, members, this was on Thanksgiving. Jessica Miles was the reporter.
They're my whole world. That's why Entira Family Clinics is the best choice for my family's medical needs. They were the best choice for my pregnancy.
Go away through that.
Someone has to pay the bills.
That's right.
Okay.
Not knowing how to read can make it difficult to succeed in life, but a new program in the Twin Cities is hoping to boost reading in the classroom by singing. It's called the Rock and Read Program. Jessica Miles talked with teachers and students about it and has more on the results it's already showing. If you listen closely,
oh my darling,
it doesn't sound like a quiet, focused classroom. Yet all of these singing students are actually learning how to read.
It helps me so I can become more of a better reader and become a fluent reader too.
It's called the Rock and Read Project, and the goal here is to get struggling readers to read at grade level.
We listen for 2 times and then but there's a chance we have this in 5 times.
The project began in 2014 with a bus turned mobile computer lab. It visited YMCAs and summer school programs in Minneapolis, serving 200 students. This year, with the help of a $100,000 state grant, it's in use in 5 metro schools.
It is an invention. It's something that is different for kids. It's all of a sudden, they wake up, they come in, they get excited about it, and it's very different.
Results at a Minneapolis elementary school last year show the reading gain doubled among 4th graders who used the program for 5 months compared with those who did not.
And the ability to keep steady read is highly correlated with reading achievement. But we also think it's prosody in the voice, that the voice needs to go up and down to understand language.
And not only are students learning to read, they're also tested on vocabulary and understanding of these folk songs. For Anati, it was the Star Spangled Banner.
And it taught me a little more about the flag of the United States.
So getting better at their comprehension, they're reading to understand versus just reading to read.
But most importantly,
they're excited to read.
And that's huge.
That's huge. They're wanting to do it.
In St. Paul, Jessica Miles, 5 Eyewitness News.
The Rock and Read Project will have initial results from the 5 metro schools in December. They'll have to report to the legislature as well. Now, for trying it out, schools get a monetary bonus at the end of the year. The hope is the program extends to other schools with the goal of helping students and closing the achievement gaps.
So the program, we have submitted the initial report for the 4 schools. We are continuing to work with them, and there will be a final report in July for the full school year.
So I'm Ann Kay, and I put the report together. I'm not a statistician. I am a music teacher by trade. But I can crunch an Excel spreadsheet. We use the FAST Bridge assessment that was developed at the U of M, and some of the schools are using it already. And so on your about fifth or sixth page, you're going to see the four schools, and you can see at each school the conclusions are near the end. But if you look at each of those graphs, the Rock and Reed students are outperforming the other students, and they're outperforming on average nearly double the achievement gain of children who are not singing. We have comparison groups at three of the four schools. One of the schools, Tessica International Charter School, all the children are singing except those brand new to country. And so that's the last graph. But you can see it varies up to 0.7 of a year gain. But the important thing to know is that that gain of the children who are using the software to sing is over 7.5 hours to a maximum of 24 hours on the program. That's it. Over 10 to 14 weeks. So most of these students were assessed in December and January. And our conclusions are that on average, these students are making nearly 1.5 year gain in that short amount of hours, and nearly double the gain of the students who are not singing, who are struggling readers. We also have concluded that the more hours in the program, the more gain. A test where they had more hours, they show more gain. And it also works with EL students. One of the conclusions I didn't put in there is also works with students who are already reading at grade level, because at TESFA we had students, three students reading at fifth grade level. They maxed out the program, which goes through eighth grade reading. They also are assessed by the FAST Bridge test at an eighth grade level. So they bring books during their time now that the other kids are in the program. So we just really would like to answer your questions.
Thank you. I mean, impressive results. I'll go to questions to other members first, and then I'll come back to ones I have. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What was the monetary bonus that schools received in that report?
When we put together the budget, we built it on what the costs were going to be, and it was recommended by a former state employee that we have some sort of a benefit to the school for doing it. So this year, we have put a $7,200 stipend at the end of the year, assuming they meet the criteria. We put together a memorandum of understanding that they had to sign saying you will perform it this way. It will be doing the regular school day. It's not an after-school program. It's not a before-school program. It's not one, well, if kids want to do it. It's a program that needs to be put in the school day. When the schools follow up with fidelity at the end of the year, if they do that, there's a $7,200 stipend they will receive.
Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chair, out of curiosity, what software or program are you using?
The software, we researched several programs to use. The one we are using currently is called Tune Into Reading. It's made by a company out of Florida, Tampa, Florida, Electronic Learning Products. And we purchased those licenses from them.
Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chair, thank you. This is a program that regular educators then implement in the schools. It's not something we're hiring staff to bring in or do anything like that.
No.
Mr. Jones.
Schools can purchase this. The company in Florida sells these programs to other schools. In fact, the country of the Bahamas is installing this in every elementary and middle school in the country. And the Bahamas, now, to keep in perspective, is almost exactly the same size as Minneapolis. So it's just their schools are 800 miles apart. But they purchase the software, they train their teachers, and they implement it in their schools.
One more. I apologize.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with the FAST Bridge that you were mentioning. Is this the software that's evaluating the gains in reading or measuring the difference? And if so, are students able to demonstrate the same gains in other measures of evaluating that?
When we first started the program, they used a closed test. Some schools use Dibbles and STARS and various others. So I started searching for a software package that could more readily allow us to evaluate students. Here was the FastBridge. I went through it. I thought, this is perfect. Where did it come from? Well, it came from the University of Minnesota. So I went down, met with them, went through it. It's about a 15 to 20 minute test, 30 questions. It gives us a snapshot view. What we have since found out is Minneapolis is piloting it in their district schools. So two of the schools that we're in, we didn't have to purchase it because they were already using it on the pilot, and one of our charter schools in St. Paul was using it. So it's becoming the standard in many school districts at the university, or developed by the university. There's a reading, math, socialization. There's a number of different programs within it that you can test. We use a reading, which is one simple program.
Representative Sandstein.
And then is the scope of this program designed to take place throughout the year, or is it just a limited number of weeks like we heard about in the film that we saw?
Madam Chair, Representative Sanson, yes, that's a very good question. It goes in the entire year, and they do it 4 to 5 days a week, half an hour each time. And so in order to get that stipend you asked about, they have to get the children on a minimum of 90 minutes a week. In our pilot, before we came to the legislature, we found that schools said they would do it, but, you know, there's a lot of, it's tough. There's a lot competing, and so they were not with integrity getting the kids on the program.
Representative Sampson.
One more question.
All right. And I lost my train of thought here.
Are you a teacher by chance?
I think this is excellent, and I've taken some of your courses and in other things, and so I'm excited to hear about this. I do know what my question was, if I may.
Yes.
Regarding the testing, how often are those tests being given? Is it once, like the STAR testing I know is done a couple of times a year, or, you know, throughout a year? How many times are they testing, and what kind of feedback have you had from staff regarding, like, the need to test frequently if it's a frequent kind of measure?
Ms. Kay.
Thank you, Chair and members. We originally thought we would test just pre and post, but there's a pre, mid, and post on this. And actually the other measure is we're going to take the MCAs from last year, from the children we have from last year, and compare them to their MCAs this year. The data on this software was, the research was done in University of South Florida, and they actually have, and I put a link in here to, I think, to the research on the software. They showed a year-to-year gain, substantial difference of gain between kids who sang with this software for 5 years on their state test. So we figure we better look at the MCAs, because there are many assessments of reading. The A reading is just one. They use Fontes and Pinnell in Minneapolis Public. We have two Minneapolis Public Schools. But by and large, what I'll say the teachers say, which was your question too, is we're assessing three times. If they want to assess more, they will. We're not seeing that they are.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe it's too early to know this, but you have some very impressive gains. And I remember this presentation from before, and I was very excited about it as well. But have you been able to also show any increase in proficiency as well as closing the achievement gap? Or is it too early?
Ms. Kay.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I think it's too early. But I would say, I think I testified before the committee last year, we went down in 2008 when we first found that the man who invented this software to learn to sing in tune and accidentally found that kids were shooting up and reading using this singing in tune thing. And so we went down to see it. And we thought, wow. And I wanted to see kids in action in the schools. And so we sat with third graders who were reading in the first grade level in the fall. And they were, reading teacher who was in charge of this said 30-50% of them would be reading at grade level to start fourth grade.
And I said, my gosh, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, you're saying you'd make up 3 years of reading in 9 months? And she said, that's what I'm saying. So we were struck. I mean, it was, I've never seen it. And even telling you, I get goosebumps right now because no one in the state of Minnesota has closed the achievement gap or even really budged it. And we, and I'm envisioning a headline in the paper saying, there's hope for struggling readers, singing.
Yes. Music teachers and others are all very happy about
yes.
this.
So thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you for putting this on the agenda because I remember the presentation from before. And more than any other presentation, I was new to the committee in the last biennium, and so everything was kind of new. But I was also a teacher for 36 years. And I just was caught by the results, by your enthusiasm. But the results, and how you're so lucky.
I am.
Don't you forget it.
No, I don't.
but over the interim, I tried to find people that knew about this, and nobody did. And I have a niece that's a music teacher, and then I have a new friend that's a music teacher, and it's just been at the front of my brain, but not pushing me to hear more. And so here we are again. And I just think the possibilities are great. And I really would like to see the results of the July report. And I wonder, do the students learn to sing better?
Immediately. Absolutely. One of the things we find, particularly the young males, when they start, they'll start, twinkle, twinkle, little star. And so I sit with them. Now, I'm a big old white guy, and I sit with students of all different nationalities and heritages, and I'll say, can you do this? Do. And they start looking at me, and then once I get them to find some tone, I try to match them. Mm-hmm. And then I'll take them up a little bit. Do, re, mi. And once they start to get some prosody in their voice, once they start to move that voice a little bit, and then Anne does her thing with the steady beat, if they can keep a steady beat, because if they can't, it's enormously difficult to learn to read. So once they do that and they see that nobody else cares what they're doing, I had one little boy say, I'm not going to sing in front of my friends. And I said, well, look around. And everybody's singing a different song, and they're all fourth graders. Some are singing first grade songs. Some are second. Some are third. Nobody knows what they're doing in terms of songs. And all of a sudden, they start picking up. And once they start that prosody and that rhythm, it's amazing how much easier it comes.
Representative Murphy. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Kay, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Yes. They're rewarded for singing in tune. So they get a gold, silver, or bronze star with this program, just like the Olympics. So they always get a bronze, but they know that the best is gold. And the mass is on the side of the page. So you see kids tune up immediately. We are on the short list for a beta test site for a neuroimaging tool Dr. Nina Krause is developing at Northwestern University. She's internationally known as a neuroscientist studying auditory processing. And it's her work that we're following that says if a kid can't keep a steady beat, they often struggle with reading. Today we just met with John Alexander at Groves Academy, who's all over it. So this is very leading edge neurological research. And so rewarding a kid for prosody in their voice and rhythmic and melodic accuracy, then they get points for vocabulary quizzes. So that there's the two prong. And you see them, they'll get a bunch of different stars and then gold, 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 gold. And the kids will get so excited. I got 10 gold stars. They just get so excited about the singing and tune. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I think that's so important because I think reading is so important. And I personally just love to read and read the same books growing up all the time because we just didn't have a whole lot, and there was just the books around, and there was no access to libraries or anything like that. And so I had 20 books, and just year in, year out, read those 20 books over and over. But in my education from first through 12th grade, there was no art except draw something on Friday. You draw a picture kind of thing, but no instruction in art, no instruction in music. And so, and once I, you know, tried out for choir and was, just didn't make it. And the only person that didn't make it. But I did get to go to the regional concert and stand with the kids when they were singing Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, that song, you know? If I didn't make noise. But I participated, and it was good. But I know how kids feel if they can't do it well.
Right.
And how hesitant they are to try a second time or a different method. And so I just think this has great possibility, and we should watch it, and we should give you hope and guidance to keep reporting back to us, because there's lots of answers for lots of kids here if everything you say is true.
Thank you.
And I believe it is.
Mr. Johnson.
The single largest factor with kids not graduating from high school today is the inability to read. And I researched this when I heard the statistic that every year in Minneapolis-St. Paul district schools, 3,000 to 5,000 teenagers drop out, fail, or leave and go someplace else and do not graduate. And all you need to do is look at the graduation statistics of roughly 50% of those kids graduating. The primary reason is they don't read. What are those kids going to do?
Yeah.
You can be bad at art, science, and a lot of things and get a good job, but if you cannot read, so reading in third grade is critical. If we can get second, third, fourth, and fifth graders and get those kids reading, it has a huge effect for the rest of their lives. I'm sorry, I get a little passionate about this myself.
Representative Murphy.
On that point, you say, if we can get the kids in second, third, fourth grade, why not 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds?
Ms. Kay.
I'll let Amy answer that.
Yes, I have been teaching a course, want to teach reading and math, try singing, to classroom teachers. We just finished a cohort, a Minneapolis Public. In fact, the ProPay guy was here today from Minneapolis Public Schools. We teach a course, 24-hour course. It's free to classroom teachers. You don't use any software. We get kids singing games, singing songs, and then they ask the question. They do action research, and actually on my website, which is lifelongmusicmaking.org, we have results of those teachers and their students pre-K, even people going to homes for early childhood special ed are taking our course. So they are singing, helping children learn steady beat, and then they research letter sound acquisition, sight word retention, math facts, and we have great data from their action research, and they can go up $1,000 on their pay scale for completing this course in Minneapolis under the QCOMP ProPay system.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, remember your presentation last time, and I'm very excited to hear the results. And we almost got one of your pilot sites in Albert Lea, but because of our end, it didn't work out. But I thank you for trying. I'm just curious, what does it involve for training the staff person that would, you know, work with this program? And then about how much would it be per student for a school to take this on, either in a classroom or, you know, as a whole school?
Chair Lea, Representative And we do about an hour of training for the teacher, and then we're there for a whole week so that with the kids. And then we do another hour for them about how to access the reports. We find that teachers are very busy and they don't access the reports much. But the reports show how a child does every minute. It tracks every child. This is personal education. Every child is tracked individually. And their quiz answers are reported there, whether they missed a comprehension question or an direct, inferred. See, I'm not a really inferential or direct. And you can look at the child's track record. So it's a total of 2 hours of staff training, of professional development for staff. And then we support them all through the year. We'll drop by, see the kids, just touch base with them.
The short answer is a school can buy 100 licenses for $4,000 for a full year. They then, depending on the technology they have, and this now runs on Macs and on PCs, it does not run on Chromebooks or pads. The primary reason is the headset and microphone. You can't have the feedback on a pad, so you can't simply use a pad. And most schools have the hardware and the technology to do it. If they have a good IT staff, it's very simple on our end and very inexpensive to simply give them the code and say, download it to your entire thing. And that's the way we save money this year, and we're able to do 4 schools versus 3. But the professional development and the teacher is very important to this process, making sure they're in the lab, just talking to the kids, for lack of a better term, a little cheerleading, saying, oh, you got all these gold stars. Did you realize you were a great singer? And all of a sudden the kids perk up a little bit. And it's quite amazing to see. And any of you who would like to see it, we are going to be setting up.
We'd love to have you come.
Over at TESFA International School, which is right near the YMCA on Fairview and University. We actually, as part of the grant, got approval to rent a space for the school because they had no classroom space, and it's in an outbuilding just behind their school in a YMCA building. We set up a lab in there, and the kids come up every day, 4 days a week now, I believe it is, and they spend their half an hour to 45 minutes on the computers, and then they go back into their regular school. And so we would like to be able to set up a time so anyone who wants to see it in action, you're welcome to. You've got our website as well on the report. Feel free to contact us, even if it's not all of you or a number of you. If somebody says, hey, we'd like to see it, we've got some time, please let us know.
Yes, and I have been talking with Mr. Jones and Ms. Kay about setting that up, and we'll inform the committee when we've got a date, and maybe we can even have a couple of dates for
sure.
In case, you know, not every member can make it on any certain time. So,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, can a parent download this, a home school or a private school or whatever?
Ms. Kay.
Sorry. I think they charge about $250 for home use.
And you can purchase that. That doesn't go through us. They simply go to the website and they can purchase it from the company and do it that way.
Ms. Kay.
I think the important thing to know, I wanted to know why this software wasn't taking off in Florida. They had it in a lot of schools. Now it's going into the Bahamas, every school in the Bahamas. My understanding of it is that there's a lot of skepticism. We've seen a lot of things come and go as teachers, and they don't work, and, you know, we still have the gap. As Don Samuels, who's has been on our board since the get-go, said, he's on the school board for Minneapolis. We look at the gap, we talk about the gap, and nothing ever changes. He said, why wouldn't we look at something else? But the inertia is, well, we've always done it a certain way. And this is different. But down in Florida, I think what happened is they had it in schools, but unless you show people with graphs what their students are doing, they will often attribute it to, oh, yeah, I'm a pretty good teacher. Or, yeah, to other things, and not to that these kids are singing. So I think it's tricky to isolate the singing piece, that this is the singing software piece that's actually making the gain, helping make the gain. And so I think it's tricky. And so that's why we buy the FastBridge, so that we could have those assessments to try to show them their comparison data. But
what you attribute it to can sometimes vary. And so actually the fellow who owns the software now is recommending that the Florida schools use the FASBridge assessment to look at their gains.
Thank you. And I will come back to you, Representative Murphy. I've got a few other folks. Representative Tace.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really a comment. I'm really pleased to see the music because I think that's something that we don't realize how great it is, how kids learn, and sometimes if something has to get cut, it's music. And my first committee of the day is Health and Human Services Reform, but there's also a subcommittee on aging and long-term care. And one of the things you find out is how folks respond to music. Mm-hmm. And yet we don't value that or look at why, what's there, what's that connection, you know, even when somebody is having some really interesting things going on. My son and daughter-in-law play music, and he's a math kid. And, you know, but we kind of don't get the connections between math and music. He's really good at math, doesn't like it, but he loves music. He just absolutely loves music, and so he's 31, and he struggled through what he wants to do with his life, and he finally found out what it is, play music. And they do a lot of nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And what they've been learning is folks will come up to him after a show. And this gentleman came up to him, just a big, Johnny said he was just like a big bear, came up to him and shook his hand, and he had tears in his eyes, and he said, "I just want to thank you." And he shook John's hand, and Johnny said, "I knew he gave me some money." And he said, "Hey, we get paid. You don't need to give me anything." And he goes, "No, you don't understand. This is the first time my mom has responded to anything in a long, long time." And I really think it's sad that we don't look at what is that about music that sticks with us when nothing else is working. So I really applaud you for what I think is a cutting-edge information of how important music is and how we learn. And I think really there's a lot we can look into to, you know, with folks dealing with dementias, you know, what is that that's connecting, and how can we really groom that with our students? Maybe we're missing a whole big piece, and you guys are absolutely the frontiers of what's going on. So thank you.
Thank you. I've got three more people on the list, so we'll just keep going with questions if we can. We've got about 4 minutes left. Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. In regard to our parents who might be in healthcare facilities, my mom is 101, and when I visit her, I sing to her, and she can sing back every single song that I sing to her, and it just lifts her spirits. And she has rather severe dementia, but she knows all the great hymns that I sing with her, and so that's wonderful. But my question of the testifiers was, where is the website listed in the report?
Oh.
Inside the front page.
And right on the logo.
Rock and Read Project.
Rock and Read logo on the front page. It says Rock
right on the front.
Project.org.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what we can access.
You can go there, and that will bring you to our website. That has tons of data, the white papers from the study.
Links to the research. And thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so this is where we would go if we want to recommend to families, not if they're homeschooled, but, you know, families whose children might be in public or private, that they can get access to the app. Is that right?
No, actually, well, you could, but then ultimately you'll need to go to tuneintoreading.com.
Okay, that's probably what I'm looking for.
Tuneintoreading.com will take you to the Florida website where you can do that. And if any of you have questions, you can't access something, please get a hold of me, and I'll get you the link to it and make sure you have that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's what I was looking for, tuneintoreading.org. One word.
.com.
Oh, .com.
Tuneintoreading.com.
Okay.
And thank you.
It's in the introduction in here, too.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of my questions was about staffing and how you guys do what you do. I'm like, I hope you guys are not just doing all this by yourself. But I also wanted to share that, you know, I really get this, right? I really get music and learning. One, as an early learning teacher, everything we do is about singing, right? You sing your alphabet, you sing your number, you sing your days of the week, you know, and so it makes sense, right? And I know within the African-American community, often enough you hear parents say, you know, my son know the words to every song. But why can't they read, right? So being able to take these two concepts, you know, and put them together to make it work in a way that can make kids successful is kudos to you for just bringing all that excitement into this body. You know, I'm really impressed with the excitement that you bring around this project. But it really, really makes sense to look at being very, you know, innovative and creative in the outcomes that we want to have here, and bring a concept that is so simple about music, you know, and the rhythm and the sound that can attach it to reading and learning is good. So I'm just waiting for some really great results to show. And again, just thank you for your passion and your commitment.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, have you experimented with adult learners with this?
No.
We have not, and we've had schools ask us, you know, what about doing high school kids that are behind? And it's kind of a kids program in terms of the looks of it. Mm-hmm. But second of all, and it sounds cruel, but once they get into high school, trying to get them to make up, I mean, an eighth grader reading at a third grade level, you know, it breaks my heart, but the reality is trying to get them to catch up is very difficult. Now, we did have a seventh grader at a second grade level with dyslexia who started using the program. His father showed up at the school a few years later and said to the teacher, I don't know if you'll remember me, but my son was in your class, seventh grader, second grade reader, heavy dyslexia. I just want to tell you, he's now a freshman at St. Olaf. Now, graduating from Hamlet, I thought maybe he couldn't get into Hamlet, so he had to go to St. Olaf. But so for kids with dyslexia, a number of them, all of a sudden they're bright kids, but they simply don't know how to read.
Right. And Ms. Kay, and I'm glad the line of questioning brought that in, because I know when you and I had met earlier, that was something that really sparked my interest as well. And is the neurologist who's studying this?
Well, we
can look at correlating some of that.
We haven't addressed the older population at all, but when I work with teachers and I'll say, you know, singing is a missing link. You could sing songs. Kids know the songs, let's say pop songs. You've got high school students reading at a fourth grade, third grade level. How are they ever going to catch up? They learn by ear. Music making, singing and music making, and language are all oral art forms.
Yes.
The reading is just the symbols on the page. So you got these bright, amazing kids rapping and everything. I say to them, read the rap. Look, you can pull up for free YouTubes and have them read the songs they already have learned by ear. It'd be free. These are high school students, and they love these songs. They're singing them thousands of times a week, and just read the words of the songs. So we're not going to address that population. We want to get them as young as possible. And actually, one of our schools has a second grade. We piloted it at Jefferson Gangbusters. We are now going to recommend the second through fifth, based on what's happening there.
Representative Murphy, any follow-up?
Thank you.
All right. Well, we have reached the end of our committee time, and unfortunately, we could probably talk about this for several more minutes, but thank you very much, Mr. Jones and Ms. Kay. A great presentation, very encouraging results, and we'll look forward to staying in touch with you and following up yet as the session progresses. Thank you very much. With that, committee is adjourned.